Our next presenter is Mayan Simpkins. Mayan graduated from Tufts University here in Boston with a BA in community health and psychology. She then earned her MPH in epidemiology from the St. Louis University College for Public Health and Social Justice. Currently, Mayan is a CDC CSTE Applied Epidemiology Fellow at the County Health Department in Portland, Oregon, where she continues her work related to opiate overdoses. Please welcome Mayan Simpkins.
So I'm Mayan, and I am presenting on heroin-related death time trends that are suggesting some intervention opportunities in the St. Louis metropolitan area from 1990 to 2012. And I have no relationships to disclose. So I'd like to begin by thanking my mentor, Dr. Sarah Patrick from St. Louis University, also Dr. Jane Turner from the Medical Examiner's Office in St. Louis, Dr. Jing Wang from our biostatistics department for their continued involvement with the research, and also the two research assistants who have taken on the challenge of playing with the data since I left. So a bit of an opening statement for you. The aim of this collaboration between the university and the medical examiner's office in St. Louis really was to improve our understanding of what factors influence opiate death outcomes and to identify what public health can really do to better intervene. These preliminary findings that I'm going to discuss today focus on how time-related trends may help inform more effective public health programming and interventions. And for those of you not familiar with the middle of the country, I circled Missouri for you. So nationally, the issue of opiate deaths has been gaining increased attention and in the past two decades as this upward trend has really continued to increase. In some regions, like in St. Louis, and you can see where else across the country, the problem is particularly pronounced. So this research really focuses on the St. Louis area because of the data that was available, and because St. Louis really continues to struggle with its opiate problem. The Trust for America's Health released a report this year that found that Missouri has the seventh highest overdose mortality rate for all drugs in 2010. They estimated that since 1999, the drug overdose mortality rate in Missouri tripled from 5 per 100,000 to 17. A little zoom in for you on the St. Louis metropolitan area. The city lies right along the Mississippi River, and on the right side is East St. Louis, which is in Illinois. So like many other metropolitan areas, the heroin market in St. Louis is entirely dependent on heroin being imported from outside of the Midwest. A number of major interstates obviously intersect right in the middle of downtown, making the city a very convenient end market for drug sales and use. The level of criminal activity and the pure quality of the drugs available within this area really qualify it as a heroin trafficking hotspot, according to all of the local law enforcement. So again, a really interesting place to look at heroin trends and opiates in general. So our specific cases that we were looking at, we reviewed all accidental deaths, so the intention was not suicide or homicide, but rather accidental, that were investigated by the medical examiner in St. Louis City. They had to have occurred between 1990 and 2012, and a toxicological screen needed to come back with morphine found in either blood or urine. All deaths were included in the analysis, regardless of a specific opiate involved. And then cases weren't excluded based on any geographic measure, where the person lived or perhaps where they died. Everyone was included. So a quick review of our methodology. The medical examiner, first of all, will investigate deaths that are unattended or suspicious. So if the individual doesn't have a physician or if they're not under frequent care from someone, it's generally considered a suspicious an unattended death. The dates of death were abstracted by hand from hard copy medical examiner records and then digitally recorded for analysis in SAS 9.3. Logistic regression methods were then used to assess the annual, monthly, and weekly trends. And the deaths over the 23 years, we plotted out using those different trends. So some preliminary results for you. Our results indicated that from 1990 to 2012, the ME in St. Louis investigated 585 deaths where morphine was found in blood or urine. Of those, 83% were male, and on average, males were about 6 years older than women. Their average age was about 40. During the 23-year study period, deaths clustered, though, in the last 5 years of the 23. There were 57% of deaths that occurred simply between 2008 and 2012. You can see it a little bit better here. So over the 23 years, our analysis really indicated that there was an increase in trend, which is very much what we expected based on the national statistics we see, the increase in awareness and discussion in media. 1990 marked the lowest number of deaths. There were only 5 reported, again, with morphine in the blood or urine. And in 2011, we found our peak at 90. This was a statistically significant increase over the previous years. Yet, in 2012, we see a decrease from 2011. And it was a 28% decrease, also statistically significant. However, if we ignore the peak in 2011 and just look from 2010 to 2012, you'll see that that increase actually continues the significant trend from earlier within those two decades. So even though there was a peak in 2011 that led to a decrease in 2012, 2012 is still a significant increase from 2010. Here's a quick review of our monthly trend. The analysis really indicated that more deaths occurred in April and July compared to other months. And there were significant differences between the most frequent months and then the lowest months. It appears then from April to July, there's some sort of peak that might be a particular concern annually. Weekday trend analysis found a significant surge on Saturdays compared to other days of the week, and then a second peak that was approaching significance, but not quite there, on Wednesdays. So Sundays and Fridays are comparable to each other, and they didn't differ significantly from Saturdays. So this tells us there was a cluster of deaths on the weekends, and then another one approaching significance on Wednesdays. So why are we seeing these trends? So the overall trend in deaths during the study period does mirror the national trend and what we expected to see because of what we found in other localities. This could be linked to prescribing of opiate pain relievers, that is, which can lead to addiction and oftentimes the search for a cheaper option and sometimes more dangerous, heroin. Missouri is also the only state without any form of prescription drug monitoring program, as some of you may have heard in other talks this week. So this eliminates just one more barrier to accessing these opiate prescriptions, and they can come from different pharmacies. Someone can go into different doctors and go doctor shopping and bring a prescription to multiple pharmacies to get it filled. Local law enforcement also is reporting that in recent years, the heroin available on the street is purer than it was in the past, which really opens up the heroin market to new users who haven't used before. We expected the monthly trend really to indicate there was an increase in cases in winter, when it's darker and colder and your mood could really influence your health. However, we found this peak in the spring, in April and July, in the early summer. So there still may be some sort of seasonal influence that we're just not seeing in this data, but this might actually be a reflection of global trends in drug sales, in drug trafficking, maybe in drug purity from where it's coming around the country, and it's that global trend being reflected at the local level. But frankly, it really does require a bit more research, although there is some evidence out there to suggest that there is a really strong link to the purity of the drugs that are being imported. So the weekend increase in opiate deaths is likely related to multiple factors, including a sense of reduced responsibility at the end of the week, a desire to relax and let loose, or maybe the receipt of a paycheck on Friday. With more free time and more expendable funds, there's more opportunity really to put yourself at risk. But the peak on Wednesdays is a little bit more difficult to understand and to interpret. And while it's not statistically significant for that data collected, it could really reflect some sort of social or institutional factor that we really still need to identify. So we brainstormed and thought that, for example, something like operating hours for certain social services organizations, the distribution of government benefits, or even release procedures for certain institutions like correctional facilities could have an influence on people's use, their trends, or their purchasing habits. All right, so the national and local response. The significant decrease last year in St. Louis could be associated with this tremendous amount of information being pumped into the community and increasing awareness within St. Louis in 2012. So the National Council on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, NACADA, held local town hall meetings, to share their concerns and discuss how to respond. In fact, one of these sessions was recorded and then aired live as well on our local PBS station, KMOX. NACADA also received funding from the Missouri Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse to begin a heroin awareness campaign called Curiosity Plus Heroin, Not Even Once. You can see the dead cat up there. Meanwhile, St. Louis Public Radio ran multiple pieces all throughout 2012 about heroin to discuss addiction and treatment options in the area. Newspapers, magazines, radio, everyone across the state really started developing these interview opportunities for people who had lost loved ones to the epidemic, bringing even more attention to this very dramatic issue. And then on September 15th in 2012, the St. Louis Arch, what we're most famous for probably, played host to a national anti-heroin rally, and that promoted awareness, discussion, and support. At the national level this year, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, that's SAMHSA up there on your right side, released an opiate overdose toolkit to help outline risk management options and methods that can really be used to help prevent these deaths. So one of the most exciting parts of that toolkit, at least for me and for many other practitioners in public health, is this discussion of naloxone. It's commonly known as Narcan. And since the 1960s, emergency medical personnel have been using it to help reverse opiate overdoses and restore breathing almost instantly in overdose patients. Some states have already passed legislation to allow lay individuals to receive official training in the use of naloxone on themselves or a third party. Trained individuals can get a prescription for the drug and then use it as necessary. I just did my training a couple of weeks ago. I'm proud to say that I am naloxone ready. So as of 2013, there are 16 states plus DC that passed laws allowing lay distribution and use of naloxone. To give you a couple examples of the success of these naloxone programs across the country, in 2002, San Francisco legalized lay naloxone distribution. It was followed by an immediate decrease in the number of heroin-related deaths, dropping to under 20. That's a pretty rapid change. Then in Cook County, and this is in Illinois, it covers the city of Chicago, they also saw this tremendous effect begin right after their naloxone implementation. Missouri currently has no naloxone legislation yet. But for a city like St. Louis, in the seventh highest ranking state for drug overdose mortality, an intervention like this could really have a tremendous impact on the health of our community. So why does it matter? While this intense response and awareness in the St. Louis community did yield a decrease in 2012's death count, integration of more specific time trend information will help in creating a more thorough public health response in the coming years. Most opiate deaths occur really in the presence of another individual, and yet most of the time, an ambulance wasn't actually called in time to save the person's life. During high-risk days or months, heightened awareness of first responders and their agencies could actually increase the capacity and preparedness for response to these overdose calls that are happening in the community, thereby reducing the number of deaths. Concerned friends and family may also be able to be more prepared if they know that their loved ones are at a particular risk at certain times of the day or year or week. Community programs like NACADA's town hall meetings could use these same time statistics to help decide when to hold their events. Even local radio could choose airing their events and their programming at times when they know they might reach people who are in particular need or particularly at risk. The opportunities to really integrate these specific time trend pieces into our public health response are really endless. Then finally, these trends suggest that continued analysis of frequency and distribution of opiate-related deaths within a period could be quite integral to developing really temporally relevant and effective public health interventions. Training and preparing those who might be present in the event of an overdose what they ought to do might drastically reduce the number of deaths that we're seeing within the community. There are some limitations and strengths I'd like to touch on. So first, analysis for this study right at the moment is purely descriptive, so no causality can be inferred from these temporal findings. Second, cases were not excluded based on geography, which is very important to note, because people, again, were not excluded based on their residence or where they actually died. And if they were reported to a different medical examiner's office and investigated, we didn't go and try to find them. Therefore, there could be some under or overestimation in the number of cases, although we're estimating it's probably all an underestimation. However, the opiate issue extends far beyond the central core of St. Louis City. It's a much broader issue. So these findings are quite relevant to the greater St. Louis area, still making them pretty applicable and useful for public health response. And then these findings may not represent all communities everywhere. But the same time trend analysis methods can be applied within these other communities to find their own relevant trends and help inform their own local public health response. This study also has some significant strengths that I'm happy to mention. First, St. Louis is centrally located. It's intersected by a number of major interstates and considered to be rife with drug trafficking activity. The constant movement of drugs into and throughout that area make it prime for studying these global, long-term drug trends at the local level and what that impact really has on the local community from the global drug market. Another strength of this study is that this is 23 years worth of data, all collected from a single office that's used consistent data collection practices throughout that time. So the data is pretty reliable and comparable across the years. And additionally, this research is rooted in medical examiner data. And for those of you who have worked with ME data before from an epidemiologic lens, can be kind of tricky. But once you sort of grasp a way of handling your epi data, pulling it from medical examiner files, it's really a rich source of social, medical, and situational factors that can really be used to study the different influences that are influencing opiate-related deaths. So as review of this data continues, beyond this preliminary temporal analysis, we're hoping to really study some of these other factors that could be quite important. So in closing, as our communities continue combating the issue of opiate-related deaths, it's important that we bring some of these temporal trends into that national conversation and discussion, locally as well. So we tend to focus on yearly changes in death rates, in simply numbers, and different death trends that change throughout years. But including those smaller temporal increments could help reveal new points for intervention and methods that we haven't yet thought of. By arming our first responders, community organizations, healthcare providers, individuals, all of these people with more knowledge about the different risk factors for opiate deaths, we stand a much better chance of combating the broad public health issue that affects our entire country. Thank you.